Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, this is the worst idea of all time.
Season 5.
Episode 7. How are we all doing? I'm asking you, Guy. Because you're closest to me.
I assumed you were. There's
a lot of people listening, but you're the closest person to be able to answer.
I'm all right.
How's it going watching all the pornography with me?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Now, when Tuesday rolls around, it used to just be sort of another day of the week.
It was the second day on the calendar.
But week. Now I know it's time to pile into the studio and watch some softcore pornography.
Yes.
Previously, from as far back as the 70s, I believe.
That was the first
Today, Emmanuel 7... as recently as 1993 and
1993.
Incredibly forward-facing.
When you say forward-facing, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's a...
Oh, shit. It's we're live.
What's that?
We're live. I'm back.
Oh.
I fucked the mic up, but we're cool now.
Some of us were live that whole time.
Yeah.
What was I saying?
Forward-facing.
Yeah, porno. It deals with virtual reality.
In a big way.
It deals with, it sort of alludes to time travel.
Yeah, they say it once.
It's got some great special effects. And yeah, I mean, it was, I don't know, I'm okay. I'm feeling okay about this this pornographic adventure. I do get bored sometimes in the movies, and I do wonder if it's... I don't think it's killing my sex drive, but I do not consider these, like...
This is an interesting thing.
The porn is...
Is there a Pavlovian sort of thing we're doing where we're destroying our libidos week after week by being in a... Kind of, we're associating the act of human sex, which we're seeing on screen, with quite a, like, non-sexual context.
Which is podcasting.
Which is you and me hanging out in a stuffy studio... watching a questionable quality rip.
It's difficult because sometimes when I watch this, when I watch the movie, sometimes there's so much exposition. And I think, you know, let's get to the fireworks factory, let's get to the sex, and then sometimes we're watching the sex. I'm like, I get it. The people have sex. Let's go and deal with this insanely ornate and elaborate setup that you've bothered to introduce.
Hashtag I'm with him because I have the exact same sequence of feelings where it's like. The stories are so convoluted. The first couple I kind of got and I liked because it was sort of worldly in a way, like in a very old school way where there was a lot of kind of othering and exotica going on.
The premises were at least simple in that it was a woman exploring her sexuality.
And they were adventure movies. You know what I mean? They were like, there was the spirit of adventure. So we were going all around the world to these far-flung places, like Southeast Asia, and seeing things that most people in the 70s weren't seeing because air travel wasn't as cheap.
That's
the important thing to remember about Emmanuel 1 and 2. And then flash forward to 93, we've all got planes. What don't people have yet? Access to quality virtual reality.
So
we're going to give you that experience.
That's
but
right.
We need to explain, in some ways, all of it, and in other ways, not really explain it well at all.
What's important to know in this film is that Emmanuel is once again played by Sylvia Christel, and she is not the...
I freaked out Rufus, but it's worth it.
She's not the romantic lead, if this, you could accuse this movie of having any romantic lead. She is a woman...
She's a matriarch.
She's sort of like... someone in the movie describes her as a virtual... The virtual madam of a whore... The madam of a virtual whorehouse.
Yeah.
And Emmanuel dismisses that. She says, I don't like to think of it in those terms.
Yeah, she doesn't sort of like out and out deny it, but she objects to the terminology used. Because she has created a networked computer system with centers in Sydney, London...
Tokyo.
Tokyo.
Paris.
Yeah, that sounds right. Where people go in and get in a GIMP suit, which has got a whole lot of sensors on it, and then they get a sexual fantasy created for them and managed by these technicians. But essentially, Emmanuel is running this high-tech sex matrix business. We're back at the Matrix, baby.
It is really interesting. I never quite wrapped my head around the sort of the balance of control inside of these VR sex fantasies. How much of it is at the mercy of the intuitions and base desires of the person who's submitting themselves to the VR, and how much of the outcome is at the mercy of sort of Emmanuel's nuanced and sort of intuitive touch?
There's a multiplayer aspect to this. I actually thought, here's where I thought the movie was going to go, and I was going to say forgive us for not getting into the plot and explaining it well, but I don't know. Fuck you. It's just, it doesn't
not necessary,
bear, it doesn't
but
bear getting
I agree,
into.
But I wouldn't have phrased it exactly like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, where I thought they were going with it is that, and they kind of did this at the end a little bit with a couple of the characters, but the whole premise is that Emmanuel creates these things called animatrons, which are human-looking entities. They're non-playable characters. They're NPCs inside of your virtual reality that you interact with and fuck often. And I thought what it was going to be is the big reveal is there's no animatrons. It's all a networked multiplayer thing and you're fucking real humans, which would be a nice angle because then it's like, hey, guess what? The virtual reality is that just go out there and fuck people. That's immoral.
Well, I mean,
you know?
There is
unplugged. There is a hashtag look up.
There is a subplot that somewhat explores that with colleagues who work at the VR center who help orchestrate these experiences for patrons or people who are lucky enough to be friends with Emmanuel. She takes under her wing and says, "Check out this technology. Go fuck that guy you wanted to fuck in high school," which is actually what happens, but. Just as a quick aside, I would like to discuss some of the...
That guy, by the way, the technician who gets his rocks off, looks exactly like Superman.
Clark Kent.
Yeah. And then he takes his glasses off and he looks like Superman.
He doesn't look that much like Superman.
He looks incredibly like Superman.
But the
what was his name?
Christopher Reeves.
Yeah, you got it. I was going to say Christopher Lloyd, but I'm pretty sure that's Doc from Back to the Future.
That is.
Yeah. Imagine if he looked like that.
That would be nice. I just want to discuss the animation, the way that they digitally represent the technology, because it is hilarious. Mm. So I don't actually understand if they can see it in the movie or if that's just for us, the moviegoer, but they have, and when they turn the sexual VR on, there are these dick ships, these like 3D rendered spaceships made to look like sort of turgid to erect, quite beefy cocks, and they fly from the space center, which is not really shown or articulated, towards this planet which has multiple entry points, all of which are represented again in sort of 3D plasticine as the openings to the planet are all essentially vaginas.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's a hell of a trip, and it's so not needed.
Yeah.
And it would have been expensive to make in 94. It looks fucking terrible. It looks shit.
Think about it. And it's 93. In 93, they would have been like, this is, that would have been, I mean, to think of where they spent so much of the, knowing that this movie was under money constraints, I believe.
I told you, is that based on what I said? Yeah. Sylvia Kristal is in it because she was under financial constraints because her husband's career was going badly.
So she was doing it to earn money for the family. Yeah. Well, I mean, just the idea that they spent this much time and energy in 1993, 2 years removed from the first Toy Story. So obviously this sort of digital...
That is a good point.
This 3D technology is advancing in leaps and bounds. It hasn't been released yet, but they've cobbled together this softcore erotica version.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's meant to be played for laughs or if it's meant to be like erotic within itself, but it's incredible. And they go back to it over and over again. And in the last scene, you get to see about 7 or 8 of these dick ships flying out to the galaxy. And it's
fucking funny. And as I say, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, it's so unneeded because we get it. You put the wetsuit on, which is a deeply unsexy way of fulfilling this like tech requirement of entering VR. You put a wetsuit on.
And so what are the gaming gloves they wear? You identify them.
A Nintendo
them.
Power Glove.
Is it actually?
It looks exactly. I think they just bought them and spray painted them. Those things come up in a surprising number of movies that can't afford to make their own shit. They just get one of those and spray paint them. I don't fully know how they... I think it's like a Nintendo SNES controller and they just kind of slap it onto your wrist. So it looks like you've got a fucking thing, a futuristic thingy. So you fucking whack one of those on, chuck on your wetsuit, and get set to get wet because your fantasies are coming right in front of your eyeballs. Why the ship? Because you're not going anywhere. We know that. The participant knows that. You're in virtual reality. There's no necessary vehicle.
It's for us. It's to represent.
It's a metaphor,
it's
right?
It's to represent the passage of like place from the real world to the virtual horny
world.
That's
putting the glasses and the wetsuit on.
I know, but people weren't as familiar. They weren't as au fait with virtual reality in 1993. There needed to be a visual, physical distillation of what was happening. And also, while we're talking about the wetsuit pump suits, or whatever you want to call them, the fuck suits.
Fuck suits.
There's an early character in what is a brutal piece of casting. This sort of like pretty normal middle-aged guy who shows up and he's like, I want to get in, I want to do it.
Yeah.
And he gets in and does it, and then in his fantasy he gets slapped because he's not attractive enough, and he comes out and he's like...
That's not why he's getting slapped.
Why is he getting slapped?
Oh, I didn't think it was. I thought it was because they saw him redlining. They've got an echocardiogram on this guy, and they're like, he's about to have a fucking heart attack because he's so unfit.
No, it's earlier than that. Before that, he's in the VR as himself, and he gets slapped, and he comes out, and the woman who's running the VR is like, yeah, might I recommend using a different body or a different face? And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah. And then so he goes into this different body. But I'm just imagining the guy who shows up to the casting being like, so you're going to be playing a middle-aged man who's...
You're too ugly to fuck.
Too ugly to fuck.
Sorry, dude.
In our porno.
Here's the good news. Here's the good news, Jock. You got the part in the porno that you're after. Here's the bad news. You're portraying a character that is too unattractive for anyone to have sex with. So you're going to be having sex in virtual reality with something called animatrons, which are basically digital avatars of people. And not only that, when you get out of there... The technician's going to be physically repulsed and suggest that you dunk yourself in a brand new bod.
That's right. He's the only major speaking non fucking role, and apart from those who carefully stipulated, like Sylvia Kristal, returned to the franchise.
She fucks though. I thought she didn't, but she does. She fucks.
When?
You know, the end and shit.
No, she doesn't.
Yeah.
No.
Off you go. Go.
Tim's just dealing to Rufus.
He's like a cat. When he's in, he wants out. When he's out, he wants in.
That's like the movie Cats. Mm-hmm. That's like the fucking Rum Tum Tugger.
The Rum Tum Tugger really gets on my tits.
What do you mean? When does she have sex?
With her friend.
That's not Sylvia Kristal.
Yeah, I was trying to remember if they do though. Maybe they don't. I just thought they were going to as adults, but they don't.
They don't.
Okay, my bad. So the character does, but Sylvia Kristal doesn't. That's where the confusion is, folks. Because this movie deals a lot with unpacking some early memories from boarding school of Emmanuel and her friend, whose name I did not catch.
Sarah.
Really?
I think so.
Very forgettable. Sorry to all the Sarahs out there. But if one of you is named Emmanuel, I would expect the other one to have a cool French name also. So they're unpacking a lot of stuff that happened. There's some awful scenes where basically her friend gets traumatized, and then Emmanuel is like, "I'm basically a psychologist. I own a digital brothel. This will work."
Yeah.
They go to pains in the script to highlight how incredibly psychologically risky what they're attempting is, but they're very keen to do it anyway. So they whack her in a wetsuit and try to relive a prior memory of basically extreme FOMO, where Sarah and Emmanuel were at boarding school together in a shower situation, and a young boy their
France.
Age comes. France?
France.
Sarah has an invitation to have sex with him, but passes, and so Emmanuel has sex with him, and that sets her on her sexual trajectory for the rest of her life. So what Emmanuel does is recreates this memory, but allowing Sarah the opportunity to have that sexual experience, and this makes her a much happier adult woman.
Yeah.
I've done a very good job of explaining the plot, and I'm disgusted you didn't congratulate me on that.
You don't get fucking congratulations for doing your job as a co-host on the podcast.
It's very convoluted and complicated, but I think I did a pretty good boil down.
Well, you left out some important extraneous details, both important and extraneous.
Okay, mate. Go on.
While she's doing this with her friend Sarah, we're going to call her, she's also been working with the aforementioned Franz.
Oh, it's... Wait, what?
He's the powerful film executive.
Fuck. Up. Is he the guy from their childhood?
That's my belief, yeah.
No.
Because when she sees him later on, so pretty much eventually, and this is why I get confused about how much of it is under control and how much of it is not, but while this woman, Sarah, who she's sort of coaching into sexual potency and adulthood, is revisiting all these sexual experiences and also exploring some new sexual fantasies, one of them is in a bathhouse where she is having sex with two men simultaneously, and there are four men who cannot for the life of them get or maintain an erection, but they're watching.
It's pretty funny to watch.
Very gently tugging at the ends of their...
just rubbing their cocks.
Cocks. This other mystery man waltzes in, who we know to be a major player in the film, and starts kissing the woman while she is climaxing, and it intensifies the climax, and then Emmanuel specifically speaks to both Sarah and that man independently, and when she's talking to the man, he's like, "Who is that woman?" And she's like, It's her.
I miss that bit. It's a good thing you're here, man. Hey guy, good job.
It's not.
Good job, man. Good catch.
It's just a porno, man. It's just a really confusing and non-sexual porno. Like,
that is the confusing part. Very non-sexual porno.
Can we get into Boner Patrol?
Yeah. I didn't get a boner in this movie.
I didn't either, and I'm actually
Are you worried it's killing your ability to get an erection?
No, I'm not worried about that at all, but I did come across a listener yesterday who was talking to me, and they were talking about the veracity of Boner Patrol and our respective ability to be honest about our performances in Boner Patrol.
I'd like to think that
gave me the idea for Boner Inspector.
Jesus Christ. Go on.
So it's a new role where it was explained in quite elaborate detail, but the nuts and bolts of it is we put rubber bands over our penises, and they register increases or decreases in tension.
This is some private all boys high school bullshit.
This is not from where I heard it. I heard this from a neutral source out in the world, not yesterday.
This is cooked. I won't even entertain this concept in jest. How would this work? That the rubber band would be stretched out or something? And are we going by like the girth expansion?
I think the scientific experiment to which the person was referring involves the rubber bands being connected to some sort of computer that can monitor like dilation of the rubber band, which in turn means that you can measure sexual moments of, you know, intensity of sexual arousal.
If we're really getting into this, if we wanted to create some sort of what are the lie detectors called again? They've got a name.
I can't remember right now, but they do have a name.
It's like a boner lie detector. There'd probably be a way to measure it using like blood pressure.
Yeah, I just think I would like to make up a special hat, and I'd come into the room, a room which I'd also already be in somehow, and I'd say, "Boner Inspector!
Tickets, please.
Boner Inspector, boners, please."
Yep.
And
I don't like the mechanics. I like the funny character idea. I don't enjoy getting into the mechanics of how it works.
I'm wearing two monocles.
Two monocles, folks. Mono meaning one and two of them meaning there's two.
I crouch down and I inspect the boners or yeah. lack thereof, and then I write it down on my little clipboard with a pencil.
Gotcha.
I don't have my pen license, and then I'm back out on the street.
How long does it take the average boner inspector to get their pen license? Because that is something I would have thought they would have clocked before they could get a job where they look at adult erect.
That's not specific to boner inspectors. That's just
everyone.
Yeah, that's just like
have you got your pen license?
Me?
Yeah. You personally?
Do I have my pen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sweet as.
Totally, man.
You should be.
Don't even think about looking at my notebooks because it's all written in pen. So
I feel like in the year of our Lord 2020, which, sorry to date the podcast, is when we're watching these, pencil is now like superseded pen. It's flipped on its head. It's like if you're a fucking cool ass designer with impeccable handwriting, you actually go back to pencil now.
Well, I'll tell you what, you won't find me writing in, and that's crayon. So.
I see you writing with crayon all the time. That's your default. It's your de facto. Incoming calls right now. What in the fuck was that? Is that you?
Yeah. There aren't any incoming calls right now.
What the fuck? Curious. Why did your phone tell you that?
Sometimes I just say, hey, are there any incoming calls?
I do. That was really odd. That is a funny thing for a phone to do.
This fucking dog, man.
Yeah, he's in and out.
No respect.
Nah. But, you know, you just fucking you deal with it.
Oi, Rufus.
Just sit on that, mate.
He yells at me. Every time I come in here, this dog yells at me.
Yeah, but he's getting better at it.
What does that mean? Better at yelling or better at not yelling?
Better at not yelling. Like, he yells for less time. He still yells. Just get up in here, mate. Yeah, go on. Come on. Good boy.
Get out of here. I'm going to read for you now. The Emmanuel 7 plot as told by
Ginger.
Someone once told me the grass was much greener on the other side. I don't know who sings it. I don't know how
Macy
the next
Gray.
Bit goes. No, not who sings it. Sorry, how the next bit goes.
That was a fucking awesome theme song and show.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that. There were two great shows featuring redhead
Pepper Ann.
Yes.
Pepper Ann was fucking great.
Pepper Ann was fantastic.
Bring back Pepper Ann.
Pepper Ann, Pepper Ann, call it Pepper Ann. Pepper Ann, wake up. No, is that right? No.
Pepper Ann, Pepper Ann, marching in a rum parade. Pepper Ann, she's like one in a million.
Yeah! I've fused that with Aqua. I've fused it with Dr. Jones. Wake up now.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, here it is. Emmanuel 7, according to Wikipedia. By the way, some interesting facts about this.
Yeah.
The last.
I'll be the judge of that.
The last officially recognized the Seven Emmanuel series.
Man, there's something I like about that in the world of it, because it's bookended with Sylvia Kristal, because she's in the first four mm-hmm. took a little breather, came back to say goodbye to the official part of the series.
So this
which was, is also exciting for us because that means from here on in, we're seeing that shit's getting weird.
Yeah, this was the, and it got pretty weird today. This was the last of the original Manuel series as a new straight-to-video VHS and later DVD hardcore series started a year later with younger actors and newer and much more adult erotic plots with full sexual situations. That had absolutely nothing to do with the original softcore stories. The plot.
At least they're ambitious, these ones, you know? My fear is that now we're just going to be watching pornography. You know, almost completely devoid of story. These stories are ambitious and they're big, and it's kind of fun. At least we've got some meat to work with, you know? But if we just like got to talk about hogs and boobs...
Sounds like we're going to be getting a lot of fresh meat to work with.
Okay.
Emmanuel now runs a clinic and laboratory that uses the sexual memories and the usage of virtual reality computer simulations on its clients to help them achieve sexual ecstasy or help them heal, depending on the subject. She helps an old girlfriend from school overcome a traumatic history due to a nun splashing cold water on her during her first sexual experience in her 10 years in a girl's locker room with a young Emmanuel watching. She also takes on several other women and a few rich men who go through the same type of sex therapy to become better lovers in the real world for a very heavy price.
They've got that wrong. Because Emmanuel has sex with them and gets the water poured on him.
I totally agree.
They've got the plot incorrect.
Well, they've rendered this...
Unless, no, I don't think that could be possible. If they fucked up the voiceover, because we did watch this with English dubs. Subs over dubs, by the way, didn't enjoy it as much. Subs, you got to really tune in because you've got to be reading the whole time. But they dubbed over this one, and unless they fucked it up so bad that they like changed core components of the story. I don't think that's like, I think it's more likely that the plot synopsis is wrong on, were you reading that, Wikipedia?
Yeah, usually quite reputable. To help her friend overcome her trauma, Manuel puts her into several simulations. In the first one, she could have her first sex without the nun splashing water. I'm with you. I think that's incorrect. I think that she's course-correcting history because, as rendered in the film, Emmanuel and the friend Sophie, is that what I said the name is?
You said Sarah.
Sarah.
What do they call her?
They don't use her name.
That's funny.
So they are in the showers, the guy comes in, and the friend is too nervous to lose her virginity, and so Emmanuel does it for her and is interrupted.
Yes.
So I'm totally with you. Anyway, in the second, she could have sex with Emmanuel, with the dormitory girls watching them. The third? She has revenge. And on the fourth, she walks naked at a male bathhouse among several naked men so she could seduce as many as possible until she could perform a sandwich sex.
Oh, yep. That was that, but yeah. A sandwich sex.
That's what it says.
That is a very funny way of describing that.
While the rest of the men watch her having an extreme orgasm with those men penetrating her simultaneously, a third man came along and gives her a passionate kiss, which gives her a much bigger and more powerful orgasm, but it was interrupted, making her fall in love with the man that wasn't penetrating her. At the end of the film, the old friend is healed and is no longer oppressed and is the wife of a powerful film executive. In the Cannes Film Festival, Sophie, they've now given the friend a name, cool. Sophie gives him... discreet oral sex. I would not describe the oral
nothing
sex.
Nothing about. Oh, no. Just play on player.
Followed by full public sex on a podium stand in front of the world press who applauded the couple once they climax. And then in parenthesis at the end, the film had one groundbreaking element to it in that the computers were being employed to watch pornography and others' fantasies and that in the future this would become integral to the making of porn and erotic movies itself.
Truly groundbreaking. Although... sci-fi have been writing about these concepts since probably the 50s, and I'm sure TV shows like Star Trek have been putting it on the small screen, since like the 1980s. So is it groundbreaking, 1993? I'm going to say no, but I'm also going to say that The Matrix stole ideas off this movie.
This particular movie?
Yeah.
What ideas?
Or they're both borrowing from original source material. The idea of plugging into a computer simulation... That's basically it.
Mm.
Especially the networked component.
But
of
for all of these VR elements and the power of, you know, these virtual sexual experiences and how they can help guide you to a more fulfilled real world sex life, we actually, or maybe not that. Maybe, like, you know, this supersedes the need for actual sex. These two people who we alluded to earlier in the podcast who are helping facilitate the VR experience and both secretly have crushes on each other, at one point they're, like, teeing up the system so that they can go in and explore a sexual fantasy together, even though they've never consummated their relationship in the real world.
Yeah.
And they're going and they're booting it up. And this is the funniest scene for the wetsuits, because you actually see them disrobing and then going to put the wetsuits on. And you're like,
it's really tricky. It's fucking
and
tricky.
And the guy goes to help the woman.
Because she's struggling, because wetsuits are hard.
And she can't get on her leg. And then they think, do you know what? This doesn't actually matter. We're just going to fuck right here on the simulator. Yeah, not in the simulator. Yeah. We're going to have sex
on the chair.
You know, the old tactile, person-to-person. What does persona non grata mean?
It means a person who has been... we don't like them. And we've cast them out. They're a... What's the fucking... what do you call them? It's like the opposite of a debutante. a person non grata, I think, like, in Latin, loosely means a person we don't want. Right? It's a person who's been cast out, an outcast from the group.
In diplomacy, a persona non grata is a foreign person who's entering or remaining in a particular country is prohibited by that country's government. In literal terms, the phrase is Latin for an unwelcome person.
There we go. I was pretty close.
Yeah, you did great. It's such a nice way to say you're not welcome.
I'm afraid I must leave the party, for it has become abundantly clear I am actually a persona non grata here.
That's right.
That's how I would like to exit my next party.
What is the circumstance?
I've turned up and I thought it was okay to be there. I didn't get directly invited, but a bunch of my friends did, and I was like, oh, they must have just forgotten to click me on the Facebook invite.
Do you check that or no?
Absolutely not. I'm a confident boy. So I just turn up, it's all good. But then I get some weird vibes from the birthday person. And suddenly it becomes clear that I should not be at this gathering.
What happens when you leave?
Grab my hat, say loudly to the room, farewell everyone, for I am a persona non grata at this occasion.
I hope you don't bungle your exit line. Was it like, why would you make a deal of your exit? If you're not wanted, just leave quietly.
I think it's cooler. It kind of like retakes some of that lost ground by not being invited to the party, to loudly declare that you're off. The opposite of an Irish goodbye.
You give everyone a sort of
farewell, party goers.
A shared enemy.
Mustache, for I am a persona non grata. Adios. Hasta luego.
I love it.
That's me. That's how I exit.
That's my boy.
That's not how you do it?
If I'm at a party I'm not welcome at?
You go around inspecting people's boners and say, boner inspector!
Yeah, then
you would get asked to leave.
I'd use my classic cover excuse, which is that I'm not actually here as a patron. I'm here as a state-mandated boner inspector.
This does arc nicely back to the diplomatic nature of the roles at the party.
Yeah. And then I'd say, so I know I'm not invited. It's awkward. I asked for someone else to work this shift.
I'm a diplomat here.
You are.
I was being Guy. Guy's a diplomat fulfilling the role of boner inspector.
That's right.
Tim, unfortunately, has cast himself as a persona non grata. Two things I want to bring up briefly that we talked about during the film.
That guy's leg.
That's pretty funny. Yeah, go on.
There's just one big, meaty, like, unkempt, fucking garden variety man's leg.
A man's leg.
Which is given
a man's leg when shot from this angle looks like a Christmas ham that rolled on a floor, a carpet.
Off-cut pubes.
Yeah.
It was absolutely devastating and certainly...
But very realistic.
As an aspiring boner inspector, it's my job to look out for things that might get in the way of a boner, and I immediately identified that as one. I mean, in what was otherwise meant to be a pretty erotic scene, the amount of... not just screen time, but actual physical space in the frame that this leg was taking up was phenomenal. What did you want to bring up? Vaporwave? I wrote that down for you.
I was going to bring that up second, but maybe I'll bring it up first. So the soundtrack in this movie is not altogether surprising. It's that kind of quintessential porn groove, but migrated over to a synthesizer, which we got a lot of in the 80s and 90s, on especially softcore pornos that had a little bit of budget. And I feel like that genre has sort of transmuted, along with a lot of other things, or it's sort of really influenced a current genre of vaporwave, which is around. And it's just so cool to take, because I was listening to the music in the background, I said to you, man, this soundtrack would be equally at home in a funeral parlor. Like, if you were in the reception area waiting for a funeral director to come and address you about proceedings, I could very much hear that kind of soft piano music,
yeah,
and a little bit of like a tiny little synthy sax that isn't doing too much, just kind of setting a tone. It's a weird genre of music to associate so heavily with human sexual activity. And yet at some point at the dawn of film porn, someone just decided this is the sound of sex. Gentle, non-offensive piano music.
Yeah.
That's how humans fuck. And now, vaporwave, I feel like, has recontextualized that music. And I think it's part of the reason why I like it so much, because it adds a sense of kind of mystery and danger to it, which isn't like, it isn't right there in the sound. You know what I mean? If you just listen to vaporwave, the actual sound of it is very innocuous. But what it's suggesting is A, video game music from yesteryear, and B, like weird-ass low-budget porn groove. And that's a nostalgic, weird coupling. The second thing I wanted to bring up is one of the main guys in this film is a dead ringer for New Zealand's own Anthony Starr, who you might know from Amazon Prime's The Boys as Homelander. He looks so much like him, it confused me.
Yeah.
But then he starts talking. But then again, we're watching dubs, so maybe it is Anthony Starr in a time machine.
It's not Anthony Starr.
It looks so much like him.
He does.
It's crazy.
He does look remarkably like him.
I should get, there's still frames. If I remember to do this, I'll do it. I'm going to get a still frame and use this as the podcast artwork. I'm going to get him and I'm going to get Anthony Starr together. And I'm either going to be proved right or wrong.
At one point in this movie, I was eating a sandwich while a woman used the VR to live out her fantasy of dressing as Marilyn Monroe and standing above a subway grate in New York's famous underground system. By the way, in background of frame, we see Cats being advertised on Broadway, which I thought was a beautiful moment. And don't eat a sandwich while, if you can help it, don't eat a sandwich while, I guess you could say you're at work.
There's,
or you could say,
there's other ways to shoot than the sort of glass table angle of being directly under someone, you know? It's not the most flattering of angles.
It was.
It's quite scientific. It's quite biological.
And for reference, it's the woman's fantasy. So she's always got this voyeur fantasy. But it just, the whole thing just felt like,
she's an exhibitionist.
I just, it's my one of my favorite sandwiches. It's a cabinet sandwich you get from
fucking
a cafe down the road. It's a mushroom sandwich. It's a focaccia bread, spinach, mozzarella, balsamic glazed mushrooms, and a house-made mayo that absolutely knocks your socks off. It's truly one of the top three sandwiches you can get in Auckland.
Yeah, you claimed to me once, I think, that it was the best sandwich money can buy in Auckland.
I've had a couple of other sandwiches since that are threatening to knock it off its pedestal. Namely, there's an eggplant parm at a cafe out between Mount Roskill and Avondale.
When you say parm,
eggplant parma. It's like a,
well, like a chicken parma, but eggplant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a fucking hard thing to pull off.
Man.
I've always wanted to crack how to cook eggplant properly, and I've never been able to nail it so far.
Well,
it's difficult.
Yeah.
I can cook it badly. I've done that a few times.
That's not nothing. Anyway, it really impacted my enjoyment of the sandwich.
Mm. You struggled, didn't you? It's something about the mushroom. Something about cold mushroom. While you're looking up a woman's skirt from directly underneath.
Oh, this whole fucking thing feels unsavory.
I don't know what the connection is, actually, either, but it just, I don't know. I had a lovely set. You bought one for me, too, which I appreciate heaps.
First, you want to eat it. You want to eat it in the offbeats.
Yep.
You want to eat it during the techie, you know, setup. Exposition
hard,
scenes.
Hard
you do
out.
Not want to eat it when a Marilyn Monroe impersonator is living out their dreams.
I feel like we've covered most of the movie,
most of what
went on. Time to put a pin in it.
Emmanuel 7.
Oh, you got a shining light for this one, brother?
He was about to have a heart attack. The guy, while he was living his sexual fantasy, he was fucking so hard in his sexual fantasy that the
he was just
like,
unfit.
The panel board and all the things were like going, warning, subject reaching, stage 5. And then we got a shot of the guy, not in the fantasy, but just like this very sort of sobering shot of him in his wetsuit, which had this insane pouch where you put your penis in. And even asked while he was getting dressed, he was putting his penis into the wetsuit. He's like, do I put my penis in there? And the woman's like,
he can't bring himself to say penis.
Do I put my thing in there? And she goes, well, if you want to feel if you want to feel the sensation there, then yes. And so it's crazy to think how perfectly judged the fabric in this wetsuit is, because his penis is in there, and presumably when he gets dressed he's flaccid. But then you see a shot
so funny, he's lying down except his dick,
and you see a shot from between his legs, so you just see his red wetsuit sheet. He's wearing a red wetsuit.
It's full on, everyone.
Anyway, I love that.
It's what we in Aotearoa would call full on.
Yeah, I like that.
I know we've already mentioned it, but man, the needless CGI dick ships really did it for me. What does the vagina planet symbolize? I guess adventures. We are in a penis ship, which is our lives, and we're heading into vagina planets, are the world.
I put it to you, what's the alternative? Is that there's a myriad of alternatives, but based on the very heteronormative rendering of these animations, would you rather see a planet with a variety of erect penises sticking out of it, and the ships are all vaginas that sort of latch onto the end of one of these?
Yeah, I think that's cooler. I think that's a cooler, because most rockets and spaceships look like dicks. So I want to see something else on there. I want to see a twist on that.
Mm.
You know, it's like a No Man's Sky. You can get a ship that looks like a whale. All the other ones look like spaceships, and then randomly there's this one that looks like a whale.
That's great.
It's fucking sick.
We'll see you next week after we've watched something that is decidedly more hardcore. How do you feel about that?
I'd be lying if I said I was looking forward to it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.